We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are responding a little bit to a comment that kind of sparked some conversation between me and Matt and, busy life things. We have a great chapter this week to read, but yes, it deserves more than just a glancing blow. It deserves the whole knuckle sandwich for us to knock it out. But time permitting and life events are keeping us to making us be a little bit more brief. But Matt,
jeez,
what's going on, bro?
Hey, man, let me tell you. So I had to give you Jimmy the whole spiel because last week Jimmy was I was making some jokes. What happened? Chest pains and stuff like that. Let me tell you, had some high blood pressure, took some medication. It did not go well for me. That's not to say that it won't go well for other people or what, you know. So I think some medications, hey, just some work for some people, some don't.
Yeah.
Jeez. I mean, I was in the hospital all week. That's because I work at a hospital, but I almost would check myself in.
I was having this. I thought I was going to have to take over. I thought I was going to have to get the passwords and
it was bad. Yeah. Yeah. I was having,
oh, we were going to lose you there for a second.
Yeah. I was taking lisinopril, which is a blood pressure medication. And, it did not go well for me at all. I had I described it, very much as discomfort and tightness. Cause if you actually say pain, then everyone really freaks out, which I think all the people were freaking out when I was describing it to them.
So, I mean, it sounded like a heart attack, to be honest.
Yeah. And I think because I'm staff, I got to talk to the on-call cardiologist, which is something you just don't normally get to do. And had to go get an EKG and another appointment, blood pressure check, and all this stuff. Anyway, that was brutal for me. And so, yeah, got a lot of that squared away. I'm much better now. Actually,
I'm glad, man. So I thought this was gonna be a one-man show.
Yeah, when Jimmy and I were recording last week, he was like, dude, are you okay?
Last episode I told Matt, I said we should not record, you should go to the emergency room.
Yeah, it was
it was bad.
So anyway, feeling much better today, but I had to give Jimmy the rundown and all that stuff and do some behind the scenes work and stuff like that. So so we're just gonna do kind of a shorter one today. But Jimmy, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right, man. I've been, work stuff's been not great for the past few months, which I'm sure many people could probably relate to, but there might be some options out there for me. So I'm kind of excited to see what the immediate future holds for me. But other than that, dude, I've been just golfing.
Yeah, like, I know.
It's bad. It's bad. I'm full blown addicted. I just got fitted for my first set of custom irons. I got pings, so I'm pretty excited about that. It's my forearms are sore from swinging so much, which means I'm gripping the club too tightly, obviously. But Yeah, it's fun, man. It's fun being out in nature. And every time I walk on the course and I'm in the backwoods of the course that I go to and it's really green, I just always think of Lord of the Rings. That's like my first thing where my mind goes when I see like just a ton of green. And it always like inspires me, one, to, you know, read my favorite books. And but also it kind of gives me the itch, like I'm like, maybe I want to write. Maybe I want to get back to writing, because I was writing pretty consistently there for a while, but have kind of fallen off the train. But yeah, man, I've just been kind of itching to dive back into some Lord of the Rings. I don't know what that means for my reading schedule, that it's already packed full, but I've also been thinking about doing a full reread of some of his. Obviously, we're doing that now, but I'm talking about just go ahead and rereading. Like, why not? Let's do it. And more and more I think about it, the more I'm considering just rewatching Game of Thrones. I
would be actually. We've talked about doing that for a long time, and I'm kind of there, because I would think we should do that. We could do it like on Patreon or something. That way we have a very consistent, you know, like recap type of thing we could do for Patreon. We did it. We actually recorded a Patreon last week. I still have a little bit more editing to do, because I really didn't get any editing done last week. Yeah, you were... normally when I do it, I normally do it like Saturday is kind of the new edit day for me. But I say we go ahead and we just start that, and we can just like an episode a week or something, and we can do like a quick little thing about we would want to do it forever, and I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the last time I watched the show was whenever I was on the Game of Thrones tour this past September in Ireland, when I was going and touring, because we were watching the episodes where we were going, because you know, there's a bit of a drive, and man, there's so many things that even early Game of Thrones like gets so well, not just from the books,
but season one, a lot of the dialogue is ripped one for one.
Yo,
like especially the pilot. Like if you go back and watch the pilot, you're like, oh, this is literally like chapters, you know, 1 through 5.
Yeah. And there's also just something about it just being incredible television.
Yeah.
Like it feels serious, but there's still those really amazing moments. Actually, this is one of the things that I've always complimented Game of Thrones on in general. And a lot of these moments were D&D, by the way. Mm-hmm. They were really good at sprinkling in humor. Like it's such a serious, it's such a grim thing. But every now and then, you know, Baratheon will say something, you're just like, what in the world? Or Podrick, obviously. Like there's so many times where you almost get a sense of calmness from the stressful situations we find all of our protagonists in by really well-placed humor. It's something I would even say all the way to the end, I thought that they did a pretty good job with, without doing the Marvel like wink quip at the camera. I hate that so much. Dude, I'm seeing it more than ever in fantasy books too, like modern fantasy books. It's driving me crazy. Crazy. I'm so tired of the winking a gun at the leader or the viewer. I'm so over it. But I think Game of Thrones threads that line pretty nicely.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. It was funny. I was listening to you on your chatting with Nuts the other day. You did with your
Alan.
With Alan. Yeah. And I popped in right when you guys were talking about Brandon Sanderson, and I was just making jokes because I don't really.
Yeah, you always enter the chat, and Matt. So Matt will come into my live streams where, you know, I talk about all types of books and stuff, and I know it's Matt, but like the rest of the people don't know, because his name is Super Gains Bros on YouTube. So he'll pop into my live chat and he'll just say the most inflammatory, like, and like he'll talk about series I know he hasn't read yet, but he's clearly Googling plot points.
Oh, yeah. I'll just be like, I loved this character's arc. People be like, oh, and the best part is when you're on like other people's live streams and I just pop in and I've not read it at all. And I just popped in and I'm like, oh, yeah, I totally love this character's arc. And then like the people be like, oh, yeah, great. Yeah, me too. I loved it. I'm just trying to help, you know, spark conversation, keep the chat alive. But you guys are talking about Brandon Sanderson, who I do know a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Just from like real time and stuff like that. And so I just popped in and I was like, I think Brandon Sanderson's overrated.
Yeah. Anyway, in all capital letters, overrated.
Yeah. And then I totally sparked conversation. But it was funny because Alan was saying something about Brandon Sanderson being like, you know, he wants to be the funny guy and all this stuff. And then today a TikTok popped up and it was Brandon Sanderson talking about like professional wrestling. And I'm like, what is happening here? Like,
yeah, Sanderson. I mean, that's a whole rabbit hole. But for me, Sanderson has really leaned into the quippy wink at the camera kind of thing. And
yeah,
you know, a lot of his recent books have felt more Douglas Adams, like Hitchhiker's Guide to me. Like he's trying to embody that, or like a Terry Pratchett, but I just don't think he's that guy. Which Alan said, I do agree. Not that Sanderson doesn't have his own talents, but I think Sanderson would like to be stronger at the points that he's not super strong at, you know? As soon as you came in and you hit the chat with that, I was like, well, there it is. Matt Stern up controversy.
It's great.
It is great.
Here's what I do. But hey, you know, we have a little bit of a controversial thing to talk about here. And so this is actually, by the way, one of our best performing podcast episodes and and things we ever did in YouTube videos. It's always getting comments. And it we did it with your friend, Joanna.
Yeah.
And is it Joanna? I always say
it's
wrong.
Joanna.
It's Joanna. Joanna, not Joanna. Yes.
I call her Joanna, but she doesn't.
Yeah. I feel bad because I know she very much doesn't like it said one of the ways, and I don't want to.
Yeah. She'll get over it.
Yeah. So anyway, we did a big episode with her, and it was in defense of A Feast for Crows, which we are edging closer towards. And actually, we have a ton of comments on this, but we had one the other day I thought was really interesting. And it is from Yerp 7444. Who says, I understand why it's slow for some people. The first and third books were sprinting. This book is like, whoa. You know, let me describe some stuff as we go. If you're trying to get to the end of the story, you're trying not to look, you know, at every statue and park and everything along the way. But the reread is fire. There's so much tea, so much world building and setting up for major events. You know, it's basically just goes on, just praises the book. And I thought I want to talk a little bit about that because it is such an interesting thing. Cause it's the first time George really did split the books, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He ran into a huge issue and ended up doing the geographical split that was suggested by his assistant at the time, Daniel Abraham, who's went on to, you know, obviously become a very successful author. He's the co-author of The Expanse and he's doing well for himself for sure. But that, you know, they came, Daniel Abraham is the one who suggested it. So they ended up splitting the book. And I think, you know, as far as the length of time we've been waiting for Winds of Winter, I think we both agree that the split and the removal of the 5-year gap, all of that made everything way harder for sure. But yeah, it was a split book. So it's already kind of a little bit awkward. Like a lot of people complain that Feast and Dance don't feel like they have super proper endings. I disagree on the side of Dance with Dragons, even though it does kind of almost feel like a part one of a story in some ways. But, you know, John dying at the end of A Dance with Dragons is a huge
cliffhanger.
Yeah,
like huge cliffhanger. I mean, he's essentially in the show. He really is your main character. Mm-hmm. But in the books, I still kind of felt like John was the main character too, because when I started reading the books, obviously I was like, it was like season 3 of Game of Thrones, and so that's when I was like starting to read it, and I maybe it was just because the show had also kind of set him up to be kind of the main character a little bit, but it was the most interesting story, the one I gravitated towards most, just because it's like I'm here for like the White Walkers and what's going on and Jon Snow's mother. Like that was the most intriguing story for me. But you know, actually in this big episode we did with Joanna, where we talked about it in a lot of comments, we talked about how much we love the Cersei chapters, because
Cersei becomes full, I mean she becomes like the full
star, and her chapters, you know, if you don't like the character, her chapters are amazing.
Oh, she's unhinged, dude.
They are some of the best written chapters in the whole series.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm fine with it getting a little slow and slowing down a little bit, but I think part of the reason it feels like it slows down is just because of the way it's split.
I agree.
Like what we're doing now, I mean, even, you know, you go back to Clash of Kings or where we're at now, where we just finished the Red Wedding, so this actually is kind of a good place to kind of like take a step back and like look at the Red Wedding in a whole, because the next week we'll be in the Tyrion, where it's the whole like, hey, Robb Stark's dead. Okay, now we're moving into the next phase. Yeah,
and Feast, by the way, is kind of the continuation of that storyline, right?
Yeah.
Like it very much centers around the Riverlands and the Freys, Jaime, Cersei. Like it is the natural continuation of that storyline.
Right. So you know, even here, it's like you're going Arya, Catelyn, Arya, and you're getting like, okay, all these sides. Same thing like we got with the Battle of the Blackwater, right? Or when we had the Bran and John chapter, and they're, you know, it's like, oh man, like here's Bran and he's in the tower and John's over there too. Oh man, if they could only see each other and talk to each other. That feels so far removed now.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like you have moments where you're sprinting and then he has to go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it's like, man, you're like all this John stuff's leading and Sam and everything that's happening north of the wall. And it's like, okay, we're getting ready for the battle of the battle at Castle Black. And now we got to go do the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I think that is one of the things why I'm totally fine. And I would be even more fine. And maybe when we've talked about splitting Winds of Winter, he should split it anyway, because there's so many big events, you run the risk of like losing momentum in certain storylines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the issues I think the show ran into as well. Oh, and I think they maybe looked at it and were like, hey, man, we lose momentum here and here by like shifting all over the place. I mean, we talked about it. It was either last week, the week before on Patreon, we were looking at the upcoming chapters. Like, it's been a long time since we've had a Dany chapter. So her stuff, as I've said forever, is always feels so removed. I'd be way more fine if he split Winds of Winter. And somebody actually did post on Reddit the other day and said something similar. It's like, I'd be totally fine if he split Winds of Winter, not because of like, oh, it's just to get it out and everything, but like,
yeah,
over in Essos now you have so many characters.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean, he has a whole continent to resolve at this point. Yeah. Right? Like, he's got a lot to do. We've talked about the split a lot. I think that it would just be better off to have something rather than nothing. Though you have to think that with the weight that has happened now, I mean, I'm already underneath the preconceived notion that no matter what he does, there's going to be an extremely loud amount of people. And I don't know if it'll most likely be the minority of people, but there is going to be a very loud sector that no matter what he releases, the easy, and it's very memeable, so people will say it on the internet, of course, is, we waited all this time for this. So if he were to release a book that maybe felt a little bit more like a feast or a dance, where like, we know we're not getting the complete story all in one volume, I think that he could run into some issues. I also wonder how much he despises the fact that he had to split a book. Like, I think he would love to just be able to kind of run away and not worry about binding issues or any of that stuff, which I understand that. I think that that makes a lot of sense from an artistic standpoint. But the thing is like, if you think about things in acts, right? We think about books like three act structure. Not every book is written like this, but let's just say in a general sense. So a series also has an overarching like rhythm and pace to it. So if we look at the first three books.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another. And don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation. But then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof, massaging leather appointed seats are available features.
It's Act One, which is an insane Act One, by the way. I think we're very much waiting for like the conclusion of Act Two, which is Winds of Winter. And then A Dream for Spring or any other books that would come after that, I think is kind of your third act. And your third act is generally your shortest as well, whenever you're writing a story. So we are very much waiting on the conclusion of Act Two with Battle of the Bastards, Dany getting over here. I assume that, by the way, that might actually just be the third act. She lands, all hell breaks loose, White Walker invasion. You know, we're off to the races and we're done. But Feast for Crows will feel a much, much better. And it already does on reread. But I agree with the comment. But I think Feast and Dance feel a lot better with that conclusion of Winds of Winter. That's why Winds of Winter is so pivotal to being released, I think, because it will enhance the books that we've already read and that we've picked up on details for. I imagine there's a lot of people that forget how much groundwork was laid in books one and two, thinking about A Storm of Swords, right? Like everything we got to that point was logically built upon to get to that point in books one and two. Feast and Dance are kind of resetting, you know, they're starting a new act. So it is a continuation of the story, but George has to reset the pacing there a little bit. And I think that him doing some more world building, a lot of character relationships, a lot of fallout from the stuff that actually happened in the first three books has a lot of value. I think it'll just be a lot easier to see that value once you have what I believe to be like the conclusion to act two, which is Winds.
So. Yeah, I agree. And that's another reason why I'm totally fine with him splitting it, because remember, Feast was supposed to be, you know, like Feast and Dance were supposed to be one book.
Yeah.
And then crazy. And then think about how much content he said when he's writing Dance of Dragons. He's like, I'm gonna have to cut this and put this on Winds of Winter.
Well, yeah,
it's like, okay, well, there's your second trilogy. I mean, and that would be another thing, because then even I know he wants it to be done in seven, but if you went to nine books,
no one cares.
Then it's three trilogies, and everyone's fine. No one cares about it anyway, right? I mean, we don't live in that.
We just want more.
Yeah, it's totally fine, because, I mean, basically just finish Dance of Dragons with like. And even if you don't want it to be call it Winds of Winter, you want to call it something else. Like, I mean, that he might run into an issue because everyone's expected that to be the next book.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I think it's totally fine.
I think also maybe the sense that it's so obvious he could just release whatever he wants and it'll be money making. It'll get a lot of buzz. Like at this point he's set, right? Anything he releases is probably going to be on the bestseller list. I think it is kind of an indication that he gives a shit. Right.
Yeah.
Because like he could just mail it in like very easily, but he's not. So I think he still cares quite a bit. You know, one of the things that I always wonder about, though, is like just, you know, getting up there in age and stuff, like sometimes the way you are able to express yourself in art, or in this case, writing, is changed by your life. I know many, many authors that have grown older and then have actually said, like, you know, I just can't write like I used to because it puts me in such a bad placement, like more so along the dark end.
Right.
Stuff. I'm thinking of a very specific author, but I talked to them in confidence, so I'm not going to say their name. But, you know, they told me, you know, as I get older, I'm actually struggling with endings. Like endings don't mean as much to me because I'm always thinking about my ending, like my life.
Right.
And I'm like, whoa. Like and I know for some people they'll be like, yeah, whatever, write the books, we don't care. But you know, there is a person behind the story. And sometimes I wonder if that's part of the hang up. And maybe he set out to write something, you know, starting in Feast for the second kind of phase of A Song of Ice and Fire. Maybe the endpoints that he was working towards don't feel right anymore. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll dialing back in a little bit on Feast for Crows. I actually think it's better, right? That we have that break, yeah. and you get a focus on some of these other characters, because like next, I've, you know, read a little ahead. So we have in our reread, we're doing Tyrion, and then we go to Davos, and it's like, wow, that feels so far removed.
Yeah.
Right. And, like even dealing with Davos and getting that whole side of it. And it kind of reminds me, because we were talking about Brandon Sanderson a little bit, I was thinking about like Wheel of Time and stuff like that. And my chiropractor is he's into all this fantasy stuff. He's always asking me about it. And every time I go in where he's always talking about it. And he said he'd just watched Wheel of Time season 3. And so he's like thinking about reading the books and
heard it was phenomenal.
I did hear that season 3 is much better. And so I was asking him what's going on. I'm like, yeah, none of that stuff happened.
They're also getting an open world RPG game.
Hey.
And I'm like, how is Wheel of Time getting this?
I know. Well, Game of Thrones just did the game. I need to dive back into it. But it kind of reminds me of that too, where it's like, man, I was like sprinting, like just as this comment said, I was sprinting through the Perrin arc in Wheel of Time and like Shadow Rising. I'm like, this is awesome. And then you get to Fires of Heaven, the fifth book, and it's like he's not even in it. So I think that's just something that happens in POV books where you're so.
Well, the scope's massive. It's hard to handle. It is.
Where you get so invested in certain storylines. And I think that might be one of the reasons why people don't like Feast as much, as maybe it's just some of the storylines you were really more invested in.
Well, people want Tyrion. They want Dany.
Right. And some of those things aren't there. And so it feels like, oh wow, you know, like the story. And now we're doing this. Now we're suddenly getting Cersei chapters, even though they're so important. So it just always causes me to wonder, like in like through point of view, right? Like focusing on this, on the story. It's not like, you know, like Harry Potter, where you're with Harry the entire time.
Yeah.
It's his care. It's third person, but it's his point of view the entire time.
Yeah.
And that is what it is. And that's a cool way to do it, but there's so much else going on you miss out on. So you do get more of a full world perspective of this whole thing. And then as we talked about doing like just point of view reads, like that's one of the things we talked about last week in that Arya chapter, even though it's really small, is if you're just reading Arya's point of view now, which is another fun way to read the series, you're like, oh man, we're getting to the gate, but things seem kind of weird. And now you actually get there. Like you walk in and suddenly like all hell is broken loose. You're like, what's going on? Like I thought I was so close. It actually makes it more heartbreaking.
I think when
you're doing an Arya point of view, then even if you're doing like Catelyn, who's the character who dies, because Arya is now so close and she's at the gate and it's ripped away from her.
Snatched from the jaws of victory.
I
think that it kind of speaks to the task that George set out to do and why it's so challenging, because there's very few stories in the fantasy genre with this amount of scope. I can probably count them on two hands, at least the ones that have been successful in what they've set out to do. But that's the thing. I think people would be okay with a split, but here's the kicker. There was like a 4 or 5 year gap between Feast and Dance, and that's what pissed people off. If he had released Feast and then the next year released Dance, and people got their Tyrion, Dany, and John chapters, people would have been way less forgiving. Way less critical, way more forgiving, because they didn't have to wait so long. People did not like that between A Storm of Swords, like they didn't get a chapter for many, many years between Storm and, for Dany. So I think splitting Winds of Winter would be fine, especially if you wanted to do another geographic one. He could do that, but... one, it does mess with the structure of the plot. And then two, if he were to take, you know, an extra 6 or even 4 years, you know, to get out part two, it will again, like you could not release Winds of Winter with no Dany chapters. No, you know what I mean? Like we need to see the cast. And also let's be fair. The cast is now starting to shrink.
Right.
So,
well, I really liked what you said, you know, earlier about like potentially like then it's, if he did split Winds, he could ascend. He could actually like the faith, like you could, like the faith part of the storyline could finish up in like, hey, remember he talked about a big Cersei block he was struggling with a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Then it kind of makes this second trilogy. Think about how much better Feast is going to be, because which is, I think, the one that everyone criticizes as probably being the worst book in the series. Not that there's only 5 books. So
you got to have a least favorite. That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have a least favorite, but now you get to see from start to finish in like a trilogy, the Cersei storyline, which I think is one of the ones that people, you know, that's the probably their least favorite character in Feast, although even though we all love Cersei, but just kind of the internet's sentiment about it tends to be. But now you get that, like the whole start to finish, like her as like the Mad Queen and the faith and dealing with it and dealing with all the people and the fallout of Jaime and everything.
Yeah.
And then it's like it ends, the big cliffhanger to this is like you could end that book if you have like Dany and John or whatever, if you kind of split Winds of Winter geographically. Now the end can be her blowing up the Sept of Baelor.
Yeah, if that's what the way they want to go, they could absolutely, he could do that.
Right? Like, just like they did in the show or something. That's a massive cool way to end a book and a trilogy.
You know, if he wants to cut down on page count and these things and not sure how to fit stuff in, you know, one thing he could have done, and he could have done this even with like the 5-year gap, is he could have released like a series of short stories or novellas as collections and been like, you know, this is what kind of happened in the meantime. This is not uncommon. Tad Williams has done this. Drew Abercrombie's released a collection of short
comic
stories.
Comic books do that all the time, where like, here's our main arc, and then they go back and fill in the spots.
Yeah, and I almost wonder if, and the thing is like, George R. R. Martin is a phenomenal short story writer, novella writer. I mean, that was his bread and butter for many years. It's like, he probably could have gotten away with releasing a 2 or 3 novella collection for the in-between stuff, and then maybe even been able to shrink like Feast and Dance down. Like, there could have been maybe, you know, just small things that could have been replaced. But, you know, hindsight's 2020. But looking ahead, and you know, as hope seems to dwindle, it's just like, I wonder if there's a way for him to just get something out, just release something. But who knows? The real thing is that Feast is amazing on reread. I think it is underappreciated on the first read. But when you go back with the reread, some of those slower moments have so much to dig into. And on top of that, those are the moments that you kind of cherish on a reread, I think, are the slower, quieter moments, especially with like Jamie.
Right. Yeah. And even Brienne and, you know, Elaine, like, you know, and the Sansa stuff. I think that's something else too, is when you look at Feast in the whole thing, it's hard because we have no idea where Sansa's story is going, because it's not going this at all the same place it's going in the show,
which makes it almost more interesting to read.
You still see that stuff happen in the show, so it's kind of like, okay, it's like, I think for a lot of people now, because you know, now anyone who's reading it has likely already watched the show, right? So totally different before, you know, when the show didn't exist.
Yeah.
So, but now I think for people who are reading it for the first time, you're like, Feast might be your least favorite, just because you're like, all right, the Sansa stuff, like, we know where this is going. But in reality, we have no idea where it's going.
Yeah. Right? And also,
we have no clue where it's going.
Just based off like how long things have been out and it's a little further in the series, I would imagine that Feast and Dance have the least amount of rereads comparatively to the first three or the whole series. So, the fun thing about it to me is that there's a lot more to discover in Feast and Dance that we don't even know is something, you know, until we get
my least favorite book to read is A Dance with Dragons.
I love Dance.
Not that the story is bad, but God, the chapters, all the chapters in it are like massive. Even on audiobook, they're all like an hour. And so it's like, you have to like really commit to reading, to reading A Dance with Dragons.
Yeah. For me, they're short because Malazan chapters later in the series start becoming 100 to 200 pages, and you're like, it's nothing, you know. It's
right.
I my stamina level is very high for long, drawn out chapters. It is different though from the rest of the series in many ways, but I think it's also because he has so much to do with Dany and Meereen. Like, he has so much to do.
Yeah,
and it's kind of crazy how much he gets done in Dance. Like, when you think about what that book accomplishes, I think it's a really impressive book.
Yeah, Tyrion is my favorite read in A Dance of Dragons.
So
he's my favorite storyline. When he's with young Griff and he's on the boat and you're like, and he's like figuring it out. Like, that's actually probably, I think, my favorite part of A Dance of Dragons.
Yeah.
Is Tyrion figuring out who young Griff is when he's on the boat and they're playing chess and he's got the dragon, and I think that's probably like my favorite part of that.
Yeah, and you're playing, you know, the what if game. If is he real? Is he fake?
It's too good. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I had to just pop in here and at least wanted to give you guys a short episode today, rather than nothing. And this kind of worked because we kind of got to talk a little bit about, like, kind of recap a little bit of the Red Wedding and stuff like that, because now we're getting to progress into the next big phase, right?
Of
this whole thing. So yeah, next week we will be back with Tyrion 6 of A Storm of Swords.
And if you like our podcast, sorry, you got me.
I might have messed it all up. That's okay.
Well, the doc is so long right now that I was just scrolling.
Oh, dude, that's okay. We'll get into it next week. Normally, we pull everything from the Song of Ice and Fire wiki, and normally the summary is like a paragraph, and this one is like pretty much the whole damn chapter.
Well, it is a big chapter.
So I'm not reading that whole thing. I was even going to like summarize, but we're not doing that. But yes.
Well, hey, if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com. or bendtheknee.podcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.